I'm Tana Hartman and of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and welcome to The Wolf Show. Our guest this morning is Melissa Radcliffe. She is the director of Our Children's Place. And welcome, Melissa.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having us be here. Appreciate it.
Start off by telling us a little bit about Our Children's Place, a little bit about its history, how it came into being.
Our Children's Place is actually in the planning and developing stages to become a residential facility, essentially a home for young children, preschool age and younger, to be able to live with their mothers who are serving out a sentence for a nonviolent crime. And it has been in the planning and developing and dreaming, conceptualizing stage for about 5 or 6 years now, but in the past year or two, there's been some funding available to renovate a facility and to hire some staff to move it towards actually being in a place where we can open the doors and start providing services.
When are you expecting to open?
We have been, for a while now, anticipating an opening date of 2009, and we've been working with an architect for about 6 months, and she keeps reminding us that 2009 is actually next year.
Next year.
So it may be that we're looking at the later part of 2009 or early part of 2010, and a lot of that's going to depend on the renovation of this facility and how long that process takes.
There was an article by Sarah Shepard that I found on your website, I think this one, and it was saying that the number of women in North Carolina correctional facilities for female offenders is nearly 3,000, 26,990 or something like that, and it has increased more than 30% in the past decade, and apparently about 72% of those are women with children.
The numbers are really, they're staggering, and when I tell people this is what I'm involved in with right now and explain the process and the program, wow seems to be the reaction that most people give. And I think part of that is because we as a society oftentimes don't think about people who are incarcerated. If we do, we don't necessarily think about women who are incarcerated, and then even more so women who are mothers and who are incarcerated and what that means for both their children and themselves. And the numbers that you talked about are pretty consistent. I checked the Department of Correction website last night, and it's about 2,800 women who are in one of the prison facilities here in North Carolina, and they represent about 7% of the prison population. That doesn't include women who are in jails throughout the state, and it doesn't include the women who are in any sort of federal facilities as well. So it really is a pretty significant number. And if we think of that 28 or 2,900, how many of those do have children and how many of them have young children where maybe they just gave birth or you have preschool age children, and what that impact is going to have on that relationship between that child and his or her mother.
What's the problem here? What happens when a woman is convicted and sent to prison? What happens to her children?
Well, if she's pregnant at the time, she may be sentenced right away, or they may hold off sentencing until she gives birth. But if she is sentenced and sent to prison when she's pregnant, usually within 72 hours of giving birth, the child is taken. And in the best circumstances, there's a place for that child to go. Arrangements have been made with family or friends or someone that can care for that child in a nurturing, safe environment until the mother is released from prison. On the other end of the spectrum, you have situations where maybe there isn't a plan in place or there doesn't seem to be any agreement of where that child's going to go, and so social services has to get involved. And now you have a child being placed in some sort of foster care, which may be an ideal situation, it may be a great home, but it may not be. And so then you end up with a situation of a child being in a not-so-great situation, and it leads to questions of what will happen then when the mother is released from prison and hopes to reunite with her children. But we know that children whose parents, or whether it's a mother or father, are in prison, are at a real disadvantage. They're six times as likely to end up in the criminal justice system themselves. They're facing issues around not bonding with a parent, in particular a mother, issues around poverty, just a whole host of things that we know then lead to that cycle continuing, where that child may be at risk of also committing crimes and ending up in a similar situation where the parents are in.
And that's a huge percentage from what I've read of those who go on to, they're six times more likely.
Six times more likely. When you think about it, it just makes sense. If that's what you've been exposed to, if that's what you're living with, that's sort of your role model of what to expect, then it would make sense. And if you are living in an environment where you don't have the skills necessary to make some good decisions about crime versus not crime, then I think it just makes sense that you end up with children who are just continuing that cycle of what their parents were involved in.
These is there are tremendous cause. I mean, aside from the personal, emotional, and social and economic costs, this is a tremendous cost for society. How does that? I mean, do you know exactly what is that? It's somewhere around $20,000, $30,000. Is that a year for per inmate that's spent just on housing the inmate? Right?
That's the figure that I've heard, and there've, you know, I think we've been having a lot of discussions in the past year or so in terms of whether or not criminal justice systems are working and whether corrections facilities are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing, and what is the cost, both what is in terms of your checkbook costs, but also other types of costs that maybe don't have a figure attached to them. But if we're talking about recidivism rates, and are people in a better place than when they leave prison than when they arrived at prison, mm-hmm. we're really talking about some pretty significant costs that have long-term effects, not just when a person leaves, but at some point down the road as well.
And what are some of those? I mean, elaborate a little bit about what those long-term effects.
Well, if we're talking about, because we're focused on female inmates, if we're talking about women who are in prison, if they're leaving prison and they don't have anything more than when they arrived, such as job skills training, or there's not been any conversations or work around dealing with trauma they've experienced as a child or a domestic violence situation they've been in, then they're not leaving in any better place than when they arrived. And the expectation is that they have been rehabilitated, they've served their time, they've paid their dues to society, and that we're expecting they're going to go back into society and somehow make some better choices and have a better life. When in fact that's probably not going to be the case. They're going back to the community they left from. If they don't have job skills or education that allow them to provide for themselves and their children in a lawful way, then they may in fact feel as though their only option is to go back to some of the activities that probably got them in trouble to start with.
But why, to play the devil's advocate for a moment, why should ordinary people, why should those of us who are not in prison, you know, never even think about it usually, Why should they care?
That's a question that comes up a number of times, especially I think when you're talking, people can seem to relate to wanting to work with and helping children. I think most of us, you know, that's an easy one. That's a given. There are children who are being affected. Let's figure out a way to make lives better. I think it can be a challenge for folks to look at. These are women. They're criminals. They committed a crime. They're getting what they deserve. They should go to prison. But most, and if you're looking at just at North Carolina, most of the women who are serving prison time are going to be released. Most women who are in prison for a nonviolent offense serve about an average of 36 months in prison. So the 37th month, they're leaving. They're going back. They're coming back into our communities. And if we're looking at preventing them from committing additional crimes, ending up back in prison, affecting us as a community, and I think we do have an obligation to say what's working and what's not working, how do we have to do things differently so that when they leave prison, that's the end. That stops it for both themselves, their children, and for the community that we are all living in.
You mentioned nonviolent crimes. What percentage? Most of these women are in, as I understand it, for nonviolent crimes. Is that correct? Drug-related
and financial crimes. And that's what we're anticipating with the women who will be staying in our program, is that it's a financial crime or some sort of a drug-related offense. And it may, in fact, be that the two are connected, that a financial crime is committed to support a drug habit. So clearly nonviolent, but clearly issues that need to be resolved. If someone is in for a substance abuse crime, then we need to be looking at what the substance abuse issue is. And in fact, are there some addiction issues that need to be resolved?
What kind of treatment is there currently in place for things like women with substance abuse?
My understanding is at the women's prison, there are a number of options in terms of substance abuse treatment. I think anytime you get into an issue around treatment, it's an issue of whether or not people are at a point of admitting that they have a problem that they need help with. How long can they commit to being in a particular program? You know, that depends on the length of their sentence. And then what happens when they leave? That treatment option may be readily available for them when they're in prison, but upon their release, it may require some additional steps to find additional treatment. And there may be some issues around the cost or availability or transportation that may make that continuation of the treatment a little bit more challenging upon a prisoner's release from prison.
I'd like to focus for a minute on the children. Again,
okay.
There are tremendous, and we all know this now, or we should, it seems to me, tremendous emotional, cause emotional and cognitive costs to children who are separated at an early age from their mother, and, you know, in this case, sometimes moved around from place to place. Talk a little bit about those kids and what you have to offer.
Well, we our children's place is actually using a model in California. There's a program there called the Family Foundations Program, and they have three sites in California. We refer to them as the grandmother program because they've been doing this for quite some time and have learned some important lessons and have expanded, like I said, to three sites. We had the chance to visit with them in February and actually spent time with the women who were in one of the facilities, had lunch with them, and I had a lunch with a woman with a 4-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old son, and the 4-year-old daughter can stay with her at this facility. The 15-year-old son is too old. There is an age limit for this program, and she said it's incredibly difficult for her and for her son because he makes the assumption that because the 4-year-old is staying with her, that the mother loves the 4-year-old more than he loves her, more than she loves him. And he has said to her, "You picked my sister over me, therefore you don't love me." And she said part of it is he's 15, and she said, "I probably can't ever do anything right because he's 15. But the other part is that he just doesn't understand that I had two choices. I could stay in prison and be with neither one of my children, or I could be in this program and be with my 4-year-old and hope that she gets a better start than what I gave him." But she said her 15-year-old is in his second or third foster family placement and is really struggling because he doesn't get to see his mother. And when he does, his mother's with his 4-year-old sister. So just in terms of that initial bonding and attachment that's so very important for when a child is born and is in the early stages of development, but even longer term, not understanding that what choices mothers have to make, and then wondering what path this 15-year-old is on as he has to make some decisions about his choices in life.
I was looking a little bit at the California program, and they're seeing tremendous success, much lower rates of recidivism. And I think it went from something like 65% in the general population, general prison population, women, and to 10% among those who were rehabilitated and helped in community-based programs like the one you're describing.
Yeah, there are a number of states around the country who are doing different types of programs that are really focused on keeping mother and children together. In some of those facilities, they're actually on the prison grounds. They may be part of a wing of the women's prison or a separate facility on the prison grounds. But there really is a movement towards two things, and they're very much interconnected. One is looking at the services and programs provided to female inmates versus male inmates, because female inmates represent such a small percentage of the prison population, we tend to use a one-size-fits-all. We'll use it with the men, therefore we'll use it with the women. And I think there's probably some debate about whether it's working with the men, but whether or not it's working with the women is even more up for debate. Excuse me. So that's being looked at, is what types of gender-responsive programs are we providing. But then the other movement is really looking at the importance of maintaining those relationships between mothers and children, both in terms of what it means for the children to be able to stay with their mother and have a relationship, but also what type of a motivational factor is that for the mothers in terms of rehabilitation and making some good choices if it means that they can stay with their children, both in a prison facility, but also once they leave prison.
This program will serve just a small percentage of these children. Is there an ideal? Do you envision an ideal that would really help improve these numbers?
Our plan is to phase in with 10 women and up to 20 children. They can each have two preschool-age children, but the facility is large enough to have up to 20 women and 40 children, which is clearly just a drop in the bucket. When you're talking about 2,800 women who are in prison in North Carolina, it's clearly a drop in the bucket. Our hope is to get this program up and running and doing really good work, and then say, how do we expand? What is this building large enough that we can expand? Do we need to look at different sites? The building is in Butner in Granville County. And so people have said, well, what about folks who are in Asheville or folks who are in Wilmington or other parts of the state? And while right now we're not focused on growth because we're focused on getting started, we know that it's meeting just a very small percentage of the need that is out there. But we really hope that by developing something good as a model, that we can then say there are other women and children who need these services. How do we expand? Where do we go? How do we make it bigger? Really using California as the model, because they started with one, they realized this is working, and that we need to look at other parts of the state, and they've expanded to three at this point.
Is that the Family Foundation in California?
It is the Family Foundation.
Okay, yeah.
And
okay.
Those are the folks that we had a chance to visit in February.
Okay. Oh, that's yeah. Wonderful. These programs like Our Children's Place, I mean, this is going to be an expensive program. But how does it compare with the other costs that, you know, that society incurs, or the spending on prisons, for instance?
It will be expensive, both in terms of, you know, a sizable building that needs to be maintained, the services available for the women and the children, and we've made a commitment to having those be the highest quality possible. So there will be a child care facility on site, it will be licensed, so really making sure that the facility is what it should be in order to provide these services, the staff is at a level of training and experience, and that they understand the difficulties that can exist with working with women who are in prison and their children in terms of their relationships. So there will be some significant fundraising that needs to happen. But if we look at making those services concentrated and high quality at that point, our hope is really that it then prevents so much more from happening down the road that needs to be resolved. You know, we're talking about services for women who are in prison, and one of the aspects of that is really looking at their abuse histories. What have they suffered as abuse in terms of children and adults? How does that intersect with substance abuse and mental health? And the hope is that by addressing those issues in a safe environment where they're surrounded by their children and are supported and feeling nurtured, that then that would lead to possibly making some better decisions when they leave prison because those issues have been resolved.
This program, I mean, it sounds wonderful, but it raises the question, what is this? This is not going to be, you know, Club Med for these women. This is going to be, they're still in prison. So what is it? What is the program?
That issue has come up before about, in fact, someone said, well, do you think that women are going to start to commit crimes just so they can end up in this program? And I don't think that's the case, because the reality is not every woman who's a mother is going to be eligible based on a number of factors. It's not large enough to have everyone who is potentially eligible. And the reality is the women who are in this program are going to work very hard when they're in this program. And when we were in California talking to the women there, they said, this is some of the hardest work I've done my entire life.
What sort of work?
Because they're, part of it is the structure, that they are in programs and involved with services with their children from about 6 in the morning till probably 8 at night. For many of them, this is the first time they've been with their children for an extended period of time, so that adds another whole element. But they
are also... It's a learning process for them, learning how to be mothers.
Most definitely. Yeah. The parenting piece, they each will have at least one shift a week in the child care facility, so they'll have a chance to model the child care providers, to be there with their children. But they're doing the substance abuse work, the mental health work, the job skills training. In California, they do a lot of the maintenance at the facility in terms of the kitchen work. They each have a couple of shifts a week in the kitchen. They're maintaining their room and common areas, but they're also involved with the maintenance of the overall building, both inside and outside. And so they said by the end of the night, they are exhausted because of the amount of work. The other piece of all of this is to really look at the fact that they're going to be leaving. And so looking at re-entry as soon as they arrive rather than looking at it as when they're about ready to leave. So that's the other piece of it, too, as well, is to make sure they're developing their skills so that when they leave, they're prepared to take care of themselves and their children. So it is definitely not Club Med. It's definitely not a country club.
I want to take just a break here and tell folks that you are listening to WCOM in Chapel Hill and Carrboro, and WCOM is an entirely listener-supported radio station. It is a completely independent, and we depend on our listeners for support, for keeping us on the air, and this is your way to have a voice in the community. I mean, if you have something to say, this is a place to say it so others can hear it. So please support WCOM. There are opportunities for local businesses to underwrite a show. There are also volunteer opportunities. So go to the website at communityradio.coop. That's www.communityradio.coop. And check us out. Thank you. Now back to Melissa. The Pew Charitable Trust has just finished this past year a long, rather in-depth study of things like this, and they're trying to help states figure out how to spend and design programs more wisely so that they're more cost-effective, more data-driven, so that recidivism rates are lower. And what they said was that there is a continual increase in our reliance on incarceration, but that's paying declining dividends in crime prevention. In fact, prison for many of these things, these nonviolent crimes, are not a deterrent to future crime, criminal activity. That, in fact, they can exacerbate it. But the expanding prisons, therefore, it's going to cost us more in the long term than building programs like this. But the work involved in building a program like this is tremendous. You've been at it, as you said, for years now. Who are some of the backers, some of the people who are helping you work on this?
Ellie Kinnaird, the state senator for Orange County, was really someone who was involved quite a bit from the very beginning, partially with her work with female prisoners, who said that one of the things that they found most difficult was that they did not have a relationship with their children. So she was looking at it from that perspective. There were folks in other parts of the state who were saying, you know, there seems to be a need. There are children. We're seeing children whose parents, one or both, are incarcerated, and we're seeing the effects as physicians or teachers or general community members, and we're not sure what to do. I mean, we've never even thought of the fact that there's a whole pool of people out there, young people, whose parents are incarcerated, and we're not quite sure how to respond to their particular needs. And you know, there must be other things that are happening. And it was one thing led to another, where some research was done to find out, well, what are other states doing? And you know, the reality is there are some states who have had prison nurseries for a number of years. Bedford Hills in upstate New York has had a prison nursery for, I want to say, probably 20 or 25 years, where young children, very young children, I think it's up to 18 months, can stay there with their mothers right after the mother gives birth. The difference between our program and that program is that that's part of the women's prison. That's on the site of the Bedford Hills prison, whereas our facility will be a separate facility. And that was a decision made to be in a separate facility, so it's not a prison, either a prison or a prison facility, in terms of what the environment the children are being raised in. So there has been work being done. Other countries have a number of programs where families, sometimes both mother and father and children, but definitely mothers and children, stay together. So it was work of folks here in Orange County, in Chapel Hill, but also folks in other parts of the state who are saying, we're seeing this need. How do we make this happen? And people saying, how do we do some fundraising, and what's the research being done out there, and how do we connect with the Department of Correction, and these little pockets of work that were being done, with eventually people coming together and saying, we need to work on this collectively. How do we get a board started? How do we establish ourselves as a nonprofit so that we can really have a concerted effort and a one presence to be able to move forward on this project?
And you are a 501c3.
We are. Right. Yeah, we've been incorporated just a little over 4 years.
Okay, great. And how is funding, how is the search for funding going?
We're somewhat of a unique situation. About 3 years ago, the General Assembly appropriated some money for the planning of our children's place, and looking at what else is out there and what type of facility would make the most sense, and really doing some research. And the facility that we're renovating, they looked at what needed to be done in terms of environmental studies and a number of different things. And then shortly thereafter, they also appropriated some money to hire some staff. So that's where I came in, and we have a part-time program director. But there was also money set aside in last year's budget, $3.5 million, to renovate the building that we'll be moving into. So there's been a fair amount of financial support, as well as interest in seeing, how do we make this happen? You know, how do we take what's happening in California and other states and make it so that it works for the situations that we have here in North Carolina? Yeah.
Has there been any resistance, any serious resistance to it?
It's actually been I've been pleasantly surprised that there have been a few folks who have just said, you know, I'm not interested in getting involved. We shouldn't be doing this. I mean, this is, you know, these are prisoners. The biggest reaction has really been, though, what's the environment going to be like for the children? And people are really concerned that you're taking children and putting them in prison when, in fact, they haven't committed a crime. So for us, the advantage of being in a separate facility is that it's not on the grounds of a prison. It's not a prison. There are no bars on the windows. There's no barbed wire fence. It's an institution, and it has that certain institution look, but it's not a prison institution. And we have really made a commitment, and working with the architect in particular, to say, how do we make this space look as home-like as we can for the children? Because they, you know, for some of them, this is where they'll be living for 2 or 3 years, and we want to make sure that it represents a good, secure, you know, visually feels like a place that children should be staying at.
This is an important pilot project. And is there any thought being given to follow up with these children after, you know, these mothers and children after they leave?
There have been a couple of very strong commitments the board has made right from the beginning, trying to be as environmentally respectful as possible in terms of renovating the building, having the daycare facility be licensed, and then also looking at the evaluation and research piece and saying, it's great that we are going to do amazing work while they're there, but really we need to look at what happens when they leave. As part of our program committee, we have a committee member whose focus is evaluation and looking at how do we track what's happening when the women and children are at the facility, but how do we track once they leave, and how do we put that into place, knowing that these women can be from anywhere across the state and maybe going back to any one of 100 counties, and how do we track that, and how do we make that just part of how we do business from day one, is the tracking piece of it, so that we're able to come back and say, you know, we know that the long-term effects of this program are X, Y, and Z.
That's good. Because, once again, the cost to society, economically, socially, are really huge.
They really are.
If we keep incarcerating people and continuing this cycle of, you know, incarceration and without rehabilitation.
Right, right. Really looking at what's been working, what hasn't been working, how do we fix those things that haven't been.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that that there is a strong interest in it, because it does seem very important. Talk a little bit about how you, just for a minute, about how you personally got involved with this. How did you?
Just one of those paths that I hadn't planned on being on, just because I hadn't even thought about it. I hadn't, you know, it hadn't really occurred to me, and I was looking to switch jobs. I had been running the domestic violence agency here in Chapel Hill, And this opportunity came up, and I thought, wow, let me give it a try and see what it's all about. And realizing that there actually are a lot of connections in terms of, you know, making life better for women and children, and knowing that, you know, so many of the women that I worked with who are domestic violence victims could very well have been in the criminal justice system themselves. So...
We need for people to go to your website, and so tell us what the website is.
Sure, it's pretty simple. It's ourchildrensplace.com, and it's something that we're really pleased that's up and running and we're using as a resource, and we're always interested in feedback. If folks think there are things that should be on there, they'd like some more information, please send us an email or give us a quick call and let us know.
Great, great. And there are things that our listeners can do to help support this program. Can you talk a little bit about some of those things?
For us right now, where we're at is we are looking for people to sort of be on this journey with us. So to start thinking about what's happening in prisons, to look at the issue around women who are incarcerated and the effects on their children, to help in terms of writing letters of endorsement, going to our website, keeping us posted of things that they hear about in the community, and you know, getting on our email and mailing list so we can let them know about upcoming events, and to let us know that there may be groups that they're part of. We'd love to come out and talk to a faith community or a business group, just to continue spreading the word that this is truly our children's place. And our board stresses the first part of that name, because these are our children, collectively as a society, and this is going to be our effort. This is not going to happen as a result of any one particular group moving forward on this.
That's wonderful. I thank you, Melissa Radcliffe, for being with us. And I wish you the very best. Please, folks, go to the website for Our Children's Place. And thank you for joining us. Tune in again next week. You're listening to WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 FM. Thank you. And next week, I believe we have... Dolores Bailey of Empowerment. Thanks.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now! We're broadcasting from Los Angeles. Today, author and journalist Robert Scheer on the pornography of power, how defense hawks hijacked 9/11 and weakened America. But first, three former prisoners at Guantanamo will speak for the first time to a U.S. audience. I'll be interviewing them from UC Davis. We'll be linking up with Sudan. We'll speak with the principal investigator of the Guantanamo Testimonials Project. And more than 30,000 people are expected to gather here in Los Angeles for the Book Expo America. We'll speak with the former president of the American Booksellers Association about the new initiative Indie Bound. It's about the unchaining of America. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. International experts are warning global food prices will remain high over the next decade. A new report from the United Nations and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development blames the rising cost of oil, the weakening dollar, and increasing demand for biofuels such as ethanol.